This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Good afternoon, party people. Thank you for sticking around for a very special edition of The Scoot Show with me, your guest host, Ian Hoke. Scoot's all right. He'll be back on Thursday. So for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, I'm going to be here at the big chair. Coleman's on the other side in the jar. And we got a great show coming up. And a great show tomorrow and a great show Wednesday. I can't wait to get into it with you. If you heard me do the handoff with Newell there, you already know a little bit about what we're doing today. Around 3:20, we're going to talk to a person named Kim Tran. Kim Tran is the owner and event coordinator of New Orleans Drifters, or No Drift, if you're nasty. And this is an organization that's trying to professionalize street racing, I think. I hope I don't get this wrong. I'll have Kim explain more specifically what the mission of his organization is. But broadly speaking, what they want to do is take, you know, car culture, the sort of underground, you know, street takeovers, the racing, the drifting around in circles, the doing of donuts that, you know, as of late have been happening in our neighborhoods. And I guess that's been going on for some time, but it's certainly caught a lot of attention in the last number of years. And this is an organization that wants to see that move into a different venue. And they've been having some successes so far to the point where now these are ticketed events. So if you like people doing donuts in their cars and their souped up, modded up, fancy cars and, you know, racing around and such, there is now an opportunity for us to go do that. Anybody can enjoy this. And it's not just going to happen, you know, on St. Claude Avenue or Almanaster or some of the other places that these have been happening. So Kim Tran is going to tell us about New Orleans Drifters and what they're up to and what events they have coming down the pike. That if you want to participate in that car culture and go see people do these kind of neat stunts with their cars, there is now a place where you can go do that safely. You can bring the family, bring down the kids, why don't you? So we'll talk to Kim Tran at 3:20 about that. Stick around. In just a couple minutes here, I'm going to talk to Dan Frumkin, who's the editor of Press Watch. And I know a lot of you that I talk to on the air or sometimes on the text line don't think that PolitiFact or Snopes are fair. And sometimes you'll say, oh, well, you can't trust those because those are, you know, those fact checks are written up by the same people that are writing up, you know, the mainstream media, your Washington Post, your New York Times, your Los Angeles Times, Politico, etc. And I've often disagreed with that. I've said, no, you know, PolitiFact and Snopes are fairly reliable. But, you know, just like any other organization, they're run by humans that sometimes make mistakes or sometimes have an implicit bias that they don't reveal to us. But broadly speaking, I think these services are useful. Well, then a couple weeks ago, I read a blog post by this fella, Dan Frumkin, who's the editor of Press Watchers. The website is presswatchers.org, about how fact checkers like that can actually sometimes do more harm than good. And they can inadvertently miss the forest for the trees and paint a picture of the issue at hand that doesn't really comport with reality. So I thought that was really interesting. It's a good way to kind of step outside my own head and think, well, gosh, you know, I've always thought that these services were pretty reliable in terms of just, you know, calling balls and strikes. But now there's this this press watch guy whose work I really respect, who says, no, these are actually, these can be pretty terrible. I said, well, I really want to know more about that. So in just a few minutes, we'll step away and talk to Dan Frumkin about how fact checkers can actually be kind of harmful for people who are trying to get a clear idea of what's happening in the political and media landscape and what people in the media, journalists, can do about it. And then there's a topic that I'm just kind of chucking in here for fun. We can talk about this all day long at any time. I don't remember exactly how this popped onto my radar. I think it was James on the North Shore who initially suggested this as a talk topic. You know, if you go to Orleans Parish Prison, you know about the bologna sandwiches, right? And I've only been to OPP once. I was only in there for like 6 or 7 hours. It wasn't a big deal. I'll tell you the story later. I was innocent. I was framed. I didn't do it. But I did get to eat one of those bologna sandwiches. So it got me thinking, well, what other kind of food do you get? Like if you're in the drunk tank, or, you know, maybe you're on a very short term stint in a prison or a jail or a correctional facility around here. What kind of food did you get? Was it better or worse than the bologna sandwiches you get at OPP? And then, man, I went down a rabbit hole reading about prison recipes. You know, because it's not just the stuff that they give you in the cafeteria. You can go to the commissary and buy, you know, chips and ramen noodles and little, you know, Slim Jims or whatever, little packaged meats. And you can turn those into something greater than the sum of their parts, right? So there's all sorts of information on the internet, all over Reddit, and there's blog posts about, you know, prison food, the kind of meals that people assemble themselves while they're behind bars. And so I've got some stuff printed out here. I'm going to share some of these prison food recipes with you. And I mean, hey, I'm not trying to glorify going to jail or saying that, like, hey, being in prison is a cool thing. But I thought we could kind of lighten the mood around here and just kind of talk about, well, what do you got to eat in there? And maybe some of these recipes are things that you could try at home. Go get yourself a pack of Slim Jims and, you know, some of that powdered cheese that you get in the macaroni box. You know, ramen noodles, maybe some Cool Whip or something like that. You can make something, you might enjoy sharing that with your family at home. So we got that and much more coming up today. We're also going to try and check in with somebody from Channel 4 about this storm that we're keeping an eye on in the Gulf. You've heard updates about it all morning. It looks like for right now, this is a storm system that we're going to watch and not panic about necessarily right now. It looks like forecasters are saying right now it's not a threat to Louisiana, but, you know, things can change. Things can change very quickly, as a matter of fact, and we'll get an update from the experts about how we should be perceiving the threat from what would be Hurricane Helene, I think is the way to pronounce it, H-E-L-E-N-E. That and lots more coming up. Let's check in with Coleman real quick. How are you doing in there, bud?
I'm doing fine. How about you, Ian?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited about the show today. I can't, you know, if people want to tell us what they ate in jail, I'm not going to ask any follow-up questions like, what were you doing in jail? Did you actually do it? You know, we're just going to talk about the food.
Yeah, speaking of which, I'm still surviving on my Francine emergency food. You know, I stocked up
nice.
A Francine,
yeah.
You know, not thinking, but then I ended up being here for 3 days and you guys fed us.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of food when I got home, like just a bunch of stuff that is so easy to, you know, you don't need anything. You just rip it out the packet and eat it.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking, I don't want to do microwave dinners anymore. I don't want to do anything that requires any effort. Just go ahead, open a packet and rip it. Like just raw hot dog weenies, bologna, just straight out the pack.
Oh,
Vienna
man.
Sausages, you know, crunched up. You ever crunched up your ramen noodles instead of like cooking it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, just stuff like that. Like I don't want to cook at all. I just want to go straight to it. I've been wasting my time cooking and microwaving.
Yeah, no, I heard that. I was actually, it's kind of an interesting sort of experiment too, to go buy all the food for the hurricane coverage. DePaul Smith and I went over to Rouse's and picked up, you know, what we thought people would be eating for the next couple days while they're here doing, you know, round-the-clock storm coverage.
Oh, full disclosure, I stole everything nobody ate.
Like,
I gave it a few days. I wanted to see, but then, like, when I realized, okay, nobody's taking this stuff, I'll just go ahead and take it.
So nobody wanted those, the, like, instant pho? I thought those would be in high demand. The thing, you know, like the Vietnamese soup pho, you just add hot water.
No, I didn't take any of those.
Well, where did they go?
I don't know where those went.
I bought like 20 of those things. And when I got back, you know, from Dallas after I saw the Green Day, there was still like 18 of them left. I said, nobody wanted to eat any of this instant pho?
No, I took the starve. I don't know what it's called. Like it's kind of like the tuna and the chicken or whatever. It was.
Yeah, the tuna, instant tuna creations. Again, something I thought, you know, that's very easy. It's a high protein,
chicken,
delicious treat. You spread it on some Ritz crackers, you throw it over some leafy greens, and then you're off to the races. But I don't, people ate sandwiches and fruit and stuff, I guess.
That surprised me because I didn't touch any of the fruits.
Yeah.
I also cheated and brought some of my own snacks that I hid from everybody.
That's what I tell people. You know, it's like we'll provide some basic foods, but that's not all that you get to eat. If you want to bring your own food for hurricane coverage, you're certainly welcome and encouraged to do that. All right. Thank you very much, Coleman. We'll talk to you more a little bit later. I'm going to read 100% of the text messages that you send in today. I'm going to reply to as many as I can. And the very best ones I'm going to read on the air. So make them count. The number to do that, if you want to get in touch, is 504-260-1870. 260-1870. That's the Oakland Art Jewelers talking text line. You can get in touch at any time during the show today. Shoot me a text. Give me a call. We'll talk about anything I got on the menu today or anything else that you like. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting for Scoot. We'll be right back.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Back after this. 122 here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Reading now from PressWatchers.org, August 21st. The concept of fact-checking is a noble one, but the way that it is actually practiced does more harm than good. That's because the fact-checkers are so devoted to not taking sides that instead of exposing the vast gulf in truth-telling between the two parties, they effectively hide it. They want to mete out their dings, if not equally, at least comparably. And that is impossible to do ethically, given that one party is constantly lying and the other is not. The author of that article, Dan Frumkin, joins us on the line right now. Mr. Frumkin, thanks for being a part of the show today.
Hi, Ian. Great to be here.
And great to have you as well. Look, some people in my audience are going to immediately take issue with this notion that that one party is constantly lying and the other is not. What's your reaction? How would you fill that in for them?
Well, you know, it's a question of doing your research and you know, knowing who to trust. And I think that what we're finding pretty clearly is that a lot of the stuff that the Republicans are saying simply is not true. Their main arguments are, you know, the border is open. It's not. That migrant crime is a huge problem. It's not. That the economy is a disaster. It's not. So you just start with those, and you keep on going. And the fact is that the Republican Party right now is lying to you about the most important things. And I say this not as a partisan, but as a journalist who's offended as a journalist that these people are lying and getting away with it.
Okay, so it seems like you lay the blame for the sort of situation as it exists now, not on, you know, partisan actors in the Republican or Democratic Party, but on the media, on political journalism and political journalists. You say that political journalism has failed to create an informed electorate. What changes do you recommend?
Well, first of all, I mean, there's enough blame to go around. You know, I mean, we can certainly blame the partisans on either side for all sorts of flaws that they have. I think the issue has been that the way that we do political journalism in this country and that we've done it for decades is sort of assumes that both sides are roughly equivalent in their sort of allegiance to the truth and in their recognition of reality and of what. And they just have different views as to what should be done, but they agree on reality. And so you have basically a situation where the traditional news story starts off saying X says, you know, the guys on this side say this and the guys on that side say that. And I don't think that's sufficient when one of the sides is not telling the truth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. I would also, in my own observation, I'd say we have a real big problem with people stacking up in major newsrooms, editorial sections, cable TV stations all over the country that have been hugely wrong about issues big and small for, not just once or twice, but over and over again, going back years, sometimes decades. And they're never really held accountable for that. Like, they keep getting invited back to offer insight and analysis with no recognition that some of their previous insights and analysis have been terrible. And in some cases, really dangerously so. The mainstream media, in my observation, is not a meritocracy. It's just a clicky little club, and it's very hard to get kicked out of the club for being bad at your job. What do you see as the way out of that?
Well, I think you're right that accountability really is the central issue and the central failure. I mean, that's what journalism is supposed to do, is hold the powerful accountable and hold people accountable for their lies and for their mistakes. And I think that sort of vision of journalism has been lost somewhat in the day-to-day following the rules of the field. And also, like you said, the it's not so much a meritocracy. A lot of it has to do with who gets access to who and who cozies up to who. And that's the opposite of accountability, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I got an article over here about Liz Cheney says something, suggesting the Republican Party should maybe split in two. And I said, oh, interesting. I'll read more about that. And of course, the person that she's talking to is Peter Baker at The New York Times, who's just awful. He's just one of these guys that's just so obviously demonstrably wrong and disingenuous, mendacious about so much of what he says. But he's never not going to have that job, that warm seat at The New York Times, so he can have access to people like Liz Cheney, who probably will not go to The New York Times unless they have an opportunity to speak with somebody like Peter Baker. But that's a distraction. I want to go back, Dan.
No, he is definitely one of the high priests of the business. Yeah. And I think what he writes is the ultimate in sort of normalizing the abnormal and sort of being above the fray and not taking sides to the point where you don't say whether someone's telling the truth or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for the listener, you'll hear us taking, shots kind of at the mainstream media as we all understand what it is. And I'm not here to say that the New York Times is a terrible rag and that CNN is, completely useless. These outlets do a lot of good things and they do them well. Political journalism is not one of them. So that's specifically where we're aiming our ire today. It's not about the investigation, the New York Times book club is fine. Wordle is great, but, stay away from the opinion page. Anyway, Dan.
The cooking section is also very good.
Yeah, love cooking. you've been a very outspoken critic of the both sides approach to political journalism. What does that mean to you, both sides, the both sides approach, the both sides problem?
Well, again, it goes back to this notion of that you have two sort of equal players and you treat them that way. And that's how the people write their articles. And so you'll have an article like today, I think was in the Washington Post, saying that Donald Trump's plans for LGBTQ plus people is alarming civil rights activists. Well, I think it's alarming a lot more than just civil rights activists. But in this case, you had to make it, there's two sides. There's Trump and then there's the civil rights activists. Mm-hmm. It's not saying what his policies are objectively dangerous to people, contraindicated by the medical establishment, and really very extremist. Mm-hmm. It's just like one person says this, the other person says that. That's how they do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You've advocated for stronger consequences for public figures who knowingly spread misinformation or who knowingly lie to their audiences. What enforcement mechanisms exist for that to happen? The only kind of real high profile example I can think of, maybe you can help me out with this, is Tucker Carlson. During the Dominion lawsuit, we see all these emails and text messages that he's sending to everyone saying, well, we're telling this lie on TV tonight, so the person that's on in the afternoon better not be telling the truth. And then he eventually gets sacked, whether there was a sort of handshake deal with Dominion, I don't know, maybe we'll never know that. But, mm-hmm. What other way is there to hold people accountable who are lying to us? And I don't mean just like they got something wrong. The set of circumstances changed between when they said something this morning and how they're reporting it on this afternoon. People that are knowingly going on the air in primetime television and telling you that the sky is green and grass is blue. What do we do with those people?
Well, you've got two different, you know, sets of people who fall into that category. One is the folks at Fox News. And of course, they're not going to be held accountable until people stop watching or until they get sued again. I think a lot of the hosts of Fox News are absolutely in that category. They're just spreading lies and people believe it. And that's one of the biggest problems we have. In fact, I think the real reality-based media should be much more assertive about countering what goes on Fox News than they are, rather than just saying, oh, those people don't listen to us. I think they should counter it very, very strongly. And then the second issue is the second group is partisans who are liars. And I think they shouldn't be getting as much airtime as they're getting. I think the Sunday shows shouldn't put on people who they know are going to lie to them. I think that you're, as a journalist, your obligation is not to broadcast both sides, even if one is lying. It's to inform your readers and your viewers. And so, if they do quote them or they do have them on, they ought to actually provide some context during the course of the interview or the article about how this person has said things in the past that weren't true. And I should add that also should another good way to hold liars accountable is not just to say they lied. It's to explain why they're lying. This is a big part of the response to lying that I think is missing in the mainstream media. You say, what's the reason? Who's behind this? What's the cause? And so, for instance, there's a really great example right now, which is, you know, the dogs and the cats. You have Donald Trump and J.D. Vance out there saying that immigrants are eating dogs and cats in Springfield, Ohio, and they know it's not true. So why are they saying it? Well, because they want attention drawn to the issue of immigration and migrant crime. Those are the things they want people talking about. So they're willing to lie to get that conversation going, have it continue endlessly.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think you'll agree, the mainstream media is not driven by a desire for truth telling. Which isn't to say that there aren't truth tellers in the mainstream media or people who will do that. Yeah. But if we're talking broadly about what the mission of most of these organizations are, it's about the quest for engagement and clicks and attention and eyeballs and ad revenue. How can news organizations balance their need for revenue with their stated objective to provide fact-based, responsible journalism?
That is such a depressing question, Ian.
I'm sorry, Dan. Here we are.
I do think I want to harken back to something you said earlier, which is that most of these news organizations do some wonderful stuff, and mostly they are still reality based. They may not be aggressively reality based, but most of what you see on the news is true. My big distinction is the political staffs, and oddly enough, I don't think they're chasing clicks. I think they're chasing sort of approval of their peer group and of their sources. But in general, I think that you described a very difficult situation where, you can make anything up and it goes viral. Sometimes the truth is a little bit less viral than that. So what do you do? It's a dilemma. I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. I did want to go back and just talk about Fox News for a minute. Listeners to this program have often heard me say all cable news is trash. But there's a difference between crumpled up newspapers and empty beer cans and dirty diapers and used needles. You know what I mean? Like those, that's all garbage, but some of it's a little bit worse than the other type, you know? So
I'm a bit more of a fan of the non Fox News cable world. I think that you can't necessarily believe everything they say, and they certainly have they may have a partisan or semi-partisan sort of view on things. But for instance, if they have said something that's actually inaccurate, they will correct it.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a concern. There's still a sense of obligation to the truth, even in MSNBC or CNN or any of these networks that the people on the right like to demonize. Mm-hmm. They won't lie to you on purpose, whereas mm-hmm. Fox does.
Yeah. I've often said also that, Fox News isn't a media organization. It's a political one. And that's not my opinion. That's not something that I just plucked out of the air because I don't like what I see on that channel. If you go back and look at the genesis of the Fox News channel, the people that started it and what their stated objectives were at that time, there's no other conclusion to draw than this is an organization that's designed to elect Republicans. And that's fine. I guess it's a free country, but I just people should know that that's what they're there to do. They're not there to educate and inform. They're designed to, you know, get their chosen candidates into office because those candidates are the one who asked for that service in the first place. Yes.
Right. But saying that, you know, is something that ought to be not very controversial in the journalistic community.
I agree.
Because but what they're doing is so anti-journalistic. But I don't feel like the major news organizations take Fox as seriously as they ought to. And I think there ought to be a regular feature where they say, here are some things going on, you know, that Fox is telling its audience that you should know because they're not true. And there are different ways of doing it. You don't want to be a megaphone to the lie. You maybe start the article by saying, here's the truth, and then here's what Fox is saying, and here's why they're saying it, and here's how it's not true. But the point is that Fox is a huge influence on American culture and life right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and probably the single reason why more people are misinformed.
My guest, if you're just tuning in, is Dan Frumkin. Dan is the editor of PressWatchers.org. Dan, I did want to get to your article, fact-checking hopefully does a fatal faceplant. We'll do that after the break. But before we step away, let me just ask you also, you've suggested that journalists should be more proactive in supporting democracy, right? I would think that everybody in America would want to be more supportive of democracy. But for journalists, that's a very important and key component of what they do. We cannot have a free democracy without a functioning free press. So where do you think journalists should draw the line between advocating for democracy? Where does that become activism at some point that's unwelcome or unwanted?
Well, I think activism for the truth and activism for the right to have your vote counted are acceptable in the journalistic community, or they should be at least. I think that standing up for the fact that people should be encouraged to vote and should be allowed to vote and should their vote should be counted, I think that's a kind of activism that you would expect them to have just as much as they when they're breathing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not troubled by that. I don't think journalists at major news organizations should be partisan. I don't think, and by partisan I mean partisan folks don't want to hear information that doesn't agree with their worldview. I think sometimes the journalists have to expose people to that. But when it comes to certain basic things like the truth and voting, I think we should be activists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll step away here and take care of a little business. Dan Frumkin, stick around just a couple more minutes. If you want to react to anything you've heard me or Dan say, the way to do it is the Okunhart Jewelers Talking Text Line. I'll read some of your text messages when we come back, and I see we're stacking up some phone calls there. Well, I'll get to y'all as soon as I can. Thanks for your patience. I'm Ian Hoke, sit in for Scoot. He'll be back on Thursday, but I'll be back right after this. Stick around. On the Okunhart Jewelers Talking Text Line, here's a text that says, hey, I think the term news has been hijacked. The 24-hour news networks are not entirely news. I'd say they're 1 hour of true news and 23 hours of opinion and spin. They bill themselves as news, and I feel Fox has been most honest in their broadcasting what are their opinion pieces and not news. Brett Baier is the only true news piece that I know on Fox. What's in a name? Unfortunately, people associate news with impartiality, but that is so far from the truth. Why not get them to take news out of their name? Would they be as successful? Interesting. My guest, Dan Frumkin, editor of PressWatchers.org. Dan, thanks again for sticking around. Great to have you with us. Your article, sure. Fact-Checking Does Hopefully a Fatal Faceplant, takes aim at these services. I don't think they're mentioned by name here, but I think everyone knows you're talking about, PolitiFact and Snopes, these websites that really only exist to call balls and strikes and say, when Obama says that you can, if you like your doctor, you can keep it, that's mostly false. Or when Donald Trump says the border is open, that's totally false. Or Kamala, all these sorts of things. And right. There are people listening to the show who don't like those services for a different reason. But I would love for you to explain what it is you think that the fact checkers are doing wrong here to the point where it's actually, it has a net negative effect on people's ability to tell what's going on in our politics.
Right. Well, it's not, it's those sites. It's also like factcheck.org. It's also the Washington Post and the New York Times and AP all have very large fact checking operations now. And I've had a beef with them for a long, long time because I love the idea of fact checking in a vacuum. But in practice, it's always been done in a certain way where the people who are doing the fact checking are trying very, very hard to find fault on with both sides. They're trying to meet out their criticism equally, such that, you know, back what in 2011, PolitiFact named an actual fact, which is Republicans vote to kill Medicare, as a lie of the year. They went that far to basically try to make it show this very performative act of showing that we ding ding Democrats too, such that they ding them for something that was actually true. So I've been saying for a long time that what we need is reality testing and credibility meters and what have you, you know, to assess the overall reality and truth telling of people. But the problem with the way they're doing it right now is it makes you generally believe that both sides are equally at fault when it comes to the truth. And when I think one of the biggest stories out there right now is that the Republican Party is routinely lying to people about stuff, it shrinks or basically covers up for that divide between the two parties, which I think is critical.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of something.
So I think it's doing more harm than good in that way.
Gotcha. Caitlin Collins said something after the debate a couple weeks ago that asymmetrical lying leads to asymmetrical fact checking. And there are people on this program and others saying, well, you know, the moderators, you know, injected themselves into the debate by saying there's no state in America where it's legal to murder a child after it's born. Well, they called Donald Trump out on that. But why didn't they call out Kamala Harris about what? You know, if you've got one person telling you, hey, it's a beautiful day outside, and another person is telling you it's raining and it's not.
Yeah.
Then
that's a really good point. That was a good example of fact checking that was not meted out in equal increments.
Yeah.
And look at all the grief they got for it. In some ways, it's probably a warning for others to not do that. But I thought it was perfectly appropriate. The fact is that you knew ahead of time what he was going to lie about. And because he lies about a lot of stuff. With Kamala Harris, I think the kind of she tends to fudge certain things a little bit, but there's never been a candidate for president who lied like Donald Trump lies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was absolutely incumbent upon them to correct some of these. And they only corrected like 3 out of like 40 of the things he said that were just blatant lies. So I give them credit for that. I thought that was terrific.
Yeah, I would love for candidates to do that in kind of a more forceful way. Trump said the same thing at the first debate with Joe Biden, that it's, you know, that it is not just an incidental idea, but it is literally Democratic Party doctrine that it should be legal to murder children after they are born. And Joe Biden just let it just go right past him without a word. I'm screaming at the television. That's such an odious, insane, demonstrably false thing to say. And then to have neither Joe Biden nor Jake Tapper or Dana Bash acknowledge it just made me think this is a useless exercise. OK, so you've advocated
it was the job of the CNN host to do that. It was not. It's not the job necessarily of the other person who's trying to make a point to have to spend the whole time, you know, fact checking their opponent.
Yeah, like but that's part of the reason I didn't love the format of the CNN debate in the first place. If you're not going to call balls and strikes, why are you there at all? Like ChatGPT could be doing this moderation.
And they announced it ahead of time even too. Yeah. So, I mean, it was like, we're not going to be doing it. Yeah. It's a real act of journalistic malpractice.
Okay. So getting back to fact checking, to be doing fact checking live is, I think, pretty challenging. Why don't you tell us what you think some of the challenges are with live fact checking and why more outlets aren't more willing to do that?
Well, the irony is that it's not hard with Donald Trump. It is generally very hard because you need to have some research at your fingertips. It's a lot more doable now with computers and, you know, the TV monitors in front of the hosts and so on. So it's a challenge. I think certainly one thing that's certainly possible is to do it in the chyrons, you know, so you're not doing it literally in real time, but in close to real time. Doing it in real time, I think, is impressive. And I think that it's only because you know you can go in with a list of 10 things that Donald Trump's going to lie about, and you know he's going to lie about 9 of them.
I want to talk about some of these alternative sort of widgets that you're suggesting instead of just relying totally on, you know, the Washington Post and Snopes and all this. What is a credibility meter? How does that work?
We basically take a look at every time you quote somebody, you say you identify their credibility rating, which is you don't look at the way the other thing that's wrong with fact checking is they tend to look for statements that are outrageous or that have numbers in them that can be easily fact checked. It's sort of it's like a random selection of statements. What you do with credibility ratings is you look at, say, here are the 20 things that they say most consistently. And are they true or not? And then every time they speak, you say this person actually has a credibility reading of 17, so he's reliable. This person has a credibility reading of 2, so she's not. That's one way of doing it. You could also call it sort of reality testing, in that basically this is a person who has also said X, Y, and Z, which are not true, which are, you know, no basis in reality. I just think that it's essential for a journalist, when they quote somebody or when they host somebody on their show, they shouldn't just allow that person to say whatever comes into their mind. There should be the goal should be accurately informing readers and viewers, mm-hmm. not necessarily exposing them to lies, you know, as if that's some sort of a virtue, but actually giving them information that they can use.
Yeah,
that's correct.
I couldn't agree more. It's like, people are often willing to call out what they view as being a falsehood or a lie, but it seems like those same, you know, media personalities and journalists are sometimes hesitant to say, yes, that's a lie, and this candidate or this party has been lying about this for decades. So if you just view this one comment in kind of a vacuum, like maybe we can have a discussion or an argument about that, but if you zoom out and look at the trees, it's absurd to think that this person would be telling you the truth. I think a great example is how Snopes got popped over the summer by people who were shocked, I think, to see them say that it was false, that Donald Trump said there were very fine people on both sides at Charlottesville.
Yeah.
And they really got into the weeds on that. Well, he said this, and then in the next sentence he says, you know, I don't support Nazis and I don't support white supremacists. Charlottesville was a neo-Nazi rally, organized by neo-Nazis, marketed using neo-Nazi iconography. If there are people that went to that rally and they don't want to be lumped in with the neo-Nazis, I don't know what to tell you. So to say that there are very fine people on both sides, and then us not to draw the conclusion that you're saying there's very fine people in with the neo-Nazis, that's crazy. But that's what Snopes tried to do, and people like yours and organizations, people like yourself and organizations like yours were quick to call them to task for that.
Well, you know, Snopes is a different case than the other fact-checking organizations. Snopes has always been sort of a click-chasing viral shop, and I have not. I generally don't trust Snopes to get things right. I don't trust the other fact-checking sites to keep things in perspective, but I think they at least get the facts right most of the time. Snopes is a wild card. And I think they were completely wrong on this issue, and they unfortunately gave people who lie a great deal of support, because they could say the media has been lying to you about this comment, which was literally, you could literally hear it. You could, like, you know, play the clip.
Dan, we're kind of running out of time here, so I want to just conclude with this question that really kind of keeps me up at night. What makes you hopeful, or what gives you any sort of sense of encouragement about the state of our political media and political journalism? I think most people would agree, what left, right, or center, this system as it exists now doesn't really seem to be serving us that well. It's supposed to be educating and informing us, and instead it just outrages and confuses us. Is there anything that gives you hope about this situation getting better in the next, you know, I don't know, 5-10 years or in the future beyond?
Well, different organizations have different motivations. I think that some of the most established, respected news organizations, like the New York Times, Washington Post, the television networks, you know, the broadcast networks, I think they have a devotion to truth-telling that, although it's sort of forgotten at times, especially in its political coverage, I think is still there. And I think the leadership, as leadership changes, as younger and more diverse journalists rise to positions of power, I think things will get better. I just don't think it's going to happen real soon.
Good deal. Thank you so much. My guest is Dan Frumkin. He's the editor of PressWatchers.org. Definitely go check out that website. Lots of useful information there. If you're an educated and informed citizen trying to make sense out of the nonsensical. Dan, thanks again for your time, your work, and your way. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you.
And there he goes. We'll be back right after this. I'll try and squeeze in some of your phone calls before we hit the news at 2 o'clock. Ian Hoken for Scoot. Be right back. And we're back here on WWLAMFM.com and always live on the free Odyssey app. Coming up in the next hour, we'll do the news bomb at 2:10, and then we'll continue the conversation about which jails or prisons in Louisiana have the best food. Some people are texting in and telling me what they ate in Orleans Parish Prison and St. Bernard and places beyond. So if you've ever spent a night in jail and you had a meal or two there, give me a text. I'd love to hear about it. Let's go ahead and tuck in a couple phone calls here. Why don't we start with LaJean in New Orleans. LaJean, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
I can. I can hear you crystal clear. We got about 2 minutes here, so let's jump right in, please.
Oh, geez. Okay. Well, I guess I really had a discussion that was longer than 2 minutes, but I guess my question is, do you consider omission of information to be a form of a lie? Omission of important information.
Broadly, I would say yes. I think we could probably find examples of people omitting information in a conversation and it not being a lie. But I think, yeah, for the purposes of your question, I'll say yes.
Okay. So I wanted to actually start this conversation with, I'm an independent. I don't belong to either party. And personally, I think the fact that one of our candidates is the historically least liked vice presidential candidate and the other is at least partially responsible for the uprising at the Capitol is like a sad state for the American country in general.
Yeah.
I don't care what party you belong to. That's very sad. Okay, so I listen to the New York Times every day. They have a podcast called The Daily, as well as the Washington Post, as well as several others. Prior to Trump bringing up Springfield, Ohio, there were no conversations around what was going on in that town. It's a town of 60,000 people. And the reporting, depending on who you're listening to in the reporting, state that there are 12,000 to 30,000 Haitians now living there. So that's either 25% or 50% of the population. To me, that's news. That's news. Would you consider that news?
Just me at my desk in New Orleans, Louisiana? No. I mean, I'm not. There are lots of places in America where there's new influx of immigrants to the point where they take up like a big part of the population. But if that doesn't get mentioned in a conversation about J.D. Vance and Donald Trump knowingly lying to you about those people eating dogs and cats, I don't think that doesn't move the needle for me either way. The story is them lying about it, not the fact that the population of Springfield, Ohio is now 30% immigrants. Hope that makes sense. LaJean, I wish we had more time. Thanks for calling. I'll be back in about 10 minutes. Here's the news.